The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Your love lifted me higher than I've ever been lifted before. So keep it up, quench my desire, and I'll be at your side.
Everybody, welcome to Reporting is Eligible. It is our season wrap up, and you know, this is just fun celebration plus questions. It was a good season. Nothing to well, there's stuff to complain about. That's what we do here, but mostly nothing to complain about. And to help review everything and defensive coordinators and good games and bad games. First in Urban Wauwatosa, making his second triumphant return in as many weeks.
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's not going to be the same without Matub, but we're going to soldier yeah. through. He's not going to chime in 10 minutes from now.
He might. Matt is allegedly tied up with something. So, we do not have Matt, but in his stead, which is good because we have a lot of questions kind of in this person's wheelhouse, joining us from the general Indianapolis area is of course.
And I'm Matt, but you cannot know. I'm Tyler Brooke, and I wrote a book. It's good to see you guys. It feels like it's been 3 years.
I think last time we talked to you, Jordan Love was still bad. I think that's all I'm
saying. I did roast myself later in the season, like quote tweeting an old tweet of mine that was AI art of Drake May in a Packers uniform.
I mean, we were all there. Honestly, one of the things about the season is this hasn't happened before. Like, it just hasn't. It's never happened before, this kind of turnaround. Like, Jordan Love was objectively bad for the first half of the season, whatever, half-ish of the season, and ended up as a top 10 quarterback in almost all quarterback metrics. I don't think that's a thing. Like, Josh Allen took two full seasons and then became good. It's unprecedented. So all of our bad predictions, I think, are at least somewhat excusable. I'm going to just toe the line for myself on that because, you know, I made as many bad ones as everybody.
My little brother never lost faith, so I got to give him a shout out. But he is also the most irrational, emotional Packers fan I know.
Yeah, I think, Paul, you mentioned the Pittsburgh game as one of the frustrating losses of the season at some point in the rundown. But
yes.
I was completely at ease in that game because I'd reached acceptance. The Packers were not going to go to the playoffs or anything ridiculous. So, like, you know, air it out at the end, bad interception. It's okay. It's all learning. They're showing signs. They're probably going to have a top 10 pick.
Yep.
You know, that's certainly where my head was at. I didn't think that there was anything wrong with losing that game. And then in retrospect, man, it would have been nice to have won that game. But I wonder, Paul, because you mentioned Josh Allen took a couple years. Does it change the calculus at all seeing it happen with such a young core? You know, because that's one of the talking points here is that because they had to learn how to become NFL players too, like maybe more has to be put on that side of things, you know, that it isn't just the quarterback who's acclimating. It's also rookies and second year pass catchers. Like, I don't know how, you know, where you can weight that to say that it was Jordan Love who got better or it was the players who got better. It's very difficult for me to figure that out.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's also kind of an unprecedented team for that reason. Usually, when you have a young quarterback like Love, you do try to have a couple veterans around to ease the transition, even if they're not super great veterans. You don't build the team like this, and it is actually a little hard to parse them because they do have so many young weapons that also grew at the same time, and all of them are kind of good in different ways. So I think I'm convinced Love is good. I'm convinced a lot of their weapons are good, and I'm convinced LaFleur is good, but I do think it was all of them maturing together that turned everybody on the team, on the offense anyway, not the defense, into good players.
I think I'm a little anxious still about this offseason because, you know, I've heard a lot of great points. Like, you know, the easy one to say is like, yeah, it's a young team. Like, they'll be even better next year. But I also heard that counter argument that, like, nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like, and that is, I think, why I love football so much. You never know.
Yeah, I'm
so,
with
like,
you.
It's an incredibly important offseason. Can these young kids mentally bounce back from a heartbreaker and just go into the offseason hungry? And, like, for my money, I will say yes. I think Jordan Love's kind of the leader for it. You got another leader and veteran in Aaron Jones kind of leading the pack. And all these wide receivers got so much better as the season went on.
I'll tell you where I will be insufferable next year. I will be insufferable on Watson over Wicks. I think I'm not out on Watson. I still like the talent. But I did some research for this rundown on especially the bad games. And almost every Love interception was a late throw to Christian Watson that he got either outfought for or just didn't run the right route on. And, you know, then he got hurt and he had like one good game this year. And then in the playoffs, I feel like some of their early season bad stuff showed up. I feel like the Musgrave kind of dumb flat routes kind of resurfaced a little bit. And Watson, he didn't have a ton of targets. He had like two targets, but I feel like he was in a lot. He played like 80% of snaps and Wicks played like 40% of snaps. And I liked it better when Watson was out and they were spreading it around a little bit more. So I'm preview of next year is me complaining about that a lot.
Hey, that's the beauty of offseason though. Plenty of self scouting is going to be happening. So.
Yeah, hopefully so. And that's true. You're right about that.
We're in the middle of the college basketball season, and Tyler, what you said resonates with me watching college basketball. There's so many teams that, oh, they bring everybody back, and apples to oranges, whatever, football and basketball, different animal, but like they bring everybody back. They're going to be amazing. And then they lose a bunch of games that they're not supposed to.
I'm an IU fan. I know what this is like.
Oh, yeah. My condolences, of course. But I also want to point out, low-key, one of the best moves Brian Gutekunst made was not bringing in Sammy Watkins Part 2,
yeah,
whoever that may have been this year, because they maximized snaps for first and second year players and made the playoffs anyway. That's an incredible feat right there. I couldn't believe they weren't going to sign anybody veteran. They weren't going to bring somebody in as a safety blanket. They just refused to do it, and that seemed like crazy stuff early on, and now obviously it seems great.
I'm so happy about that. I have been like, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek proponent in the past of not having veterans just for the sake of veterans, and it's not that they have no value. Like, if you do sign a good leader, that can be helpful. It absolutely can. But I've always wanted to try this. and this, to see it work is great. One of the reasons I've always wanted to try it is a stupid reason, which is that my favorite video game growing up was Baseball Stars for the Nintendo, the favorite Tecmo Bowl in that. And in that game, you build a team from scratch. It's not a Major League Baseball license game. And you get to pick what you start being good at. You can pick like good pitching, fast pitching, control pitching, good hitting, good power hitting. And then there's one for veterans. And it's not like people dig into Nintendo code now. And the veteran one just makes you lucky. That's all it does. Like, and like, it's always kind of stuck with me. Like, yeah, I mean, veterans aren't nothing. You know, it's good to teach people how to win. And actually, I think the Packers maybe would have fared a little better in the playoffs with a little more experience. I think that's one of the reasons they couldn't seize that game. But like, I like all the young kids gelling together, and I'm glad there wasn't a Sammy Watkins wasting a roster spot, taking Bo Melton's spot. Like, think about that.
I was gonna say, with a veteran, you don't have Bo Melton.
Bo Melton's like
insane,
one of the
insane surges.
Yeah, one of the most important players of the season doesn't get on the field.
So, yeah.
Or if Aaron Rodgers is still the quarterback, none of these people are on the field.
Yeah, that was my other thing. I've had that conversation. Like, if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback, how hamstrung is the development of these wide receivers? And like, I don't want to talk about any of the other stuff, but it's just, he was known to get on young guys. And like, DeGuara, I'm convinced, if he had never had Rodgers as his quarterback, he's probably a different player today. But that man's confidence was just destroyed.
Poor
after
Josiah.
Two seasons.
Yep.
Or poor Josiah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think any of these guys develop. I also don't think the roster looks like this. I think he demands that he has two or three guys who are washed to be his guys.
Yeah, we probably have DJ Chark on the team and some other trash. And yeah, that's probably how that looks. No Tucker Kraft, no Luke Musgrave. No. All right.
You know, it's crazy that we've been talking for any length of time and haven't even mentioned that Joe Barry is no longer the defensive coordinator since we last chatted.
Wild.
It is wild. I'm not sad we didn't learn that till after we recorded last week, because we did learn it now, but we should pour one out. We were right.
Guy who said he was not probably not coming back? Who believed that was going to be the case?
Oh, okay. I listened to that episode. What do you know, JR? Who was feeding you info? The way you said it, I was like, he knows something.
I legitimately did not have any inside information. I merely could easily take the temperature of my colleagues, Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, who I don't think they had necessarily inside information, but they had a really good feeling that it was going to be.
And if nothing else,
Tom, he really thought it was.
Yeah, they talk to people and they're around the locker room and they have a much better read on the interactions of the team with Joe Barry, even if they don't know anything. And that's not to say they don't, because they're good, but you know, you can tell if you're around people what's going on. So. And I'm glad I was wrong, because it makes me more confident in the organization that they weren't fooled by sort of surface-level Joe Barry performance into bringing him back.
In a sick, twisted way, I'm kind of, like, glad my last memories of Joe Barry are kind of positive.
Yeah.
Because I thought the playoff performances were pretty admirable, considering the lack of talent you have at safety. Really kind of a bang-up job in 1.5 playoff games.
Yep. I agree. 100%. Yeah, he went out strong.
He did.
We'll never know how much input Matt LaFleur had there at the end. You know, once things really hit rock bottom with the Giants and Tampa Bay back-to-back, something changed. And maybe on the Panthers too. Something changed, and it might have just been Joe Barry, you know? Like, you don't want to completely deprive him of credit, but it might have been that there was something else, some other element that was introduced where it was like, we have to do this or we have no chance. I don't know. I love this process, because the names that are getting floated are, for one thing, names that most people haven't heard of. I certainly haven't heard of these guys. Mm-mm. But you know, you start looking into them, and it's just like the energy and the interesting, you know, backgrounds and the, like, every candidate is kind of exciting. You know, like, it's because these guys are in their 30s and don't have a huge track record, you don't really rule anybody out. Like, this is a really exciting, I think, search process. And it, like, I even said this, it made me go back, made me say to Paul, like, what were they seeing 3 years ago when they looked out at the landscape and thought, what we need is a 52-year-old guy who has struggled at two other locations to come in and be, I mean, that was their Sammy Watkins hire, right? Like, I cannot believe that they did that, given the what's out there is so interesting. And it might not work out. It might not, but like, defense is such a puzzle, you know, like, you never really know where the brains are in the operation, because it's such a holistic thing. Like, I don't think you can definitively zero in on any of these guys and say that should be the choice or that should be the choice. So they have to, you know, parse that out. That's a tough process. But, you know, on the surface, all these guys are so interesting. Like, yeah, Christian Parker. Oh, they should definitely bring him in. And then Denard Walker gets mentioned, like, oh, you should definitely bring him in. And or from the Ravens, you know, like, there's so many guys that would be awesome. Evero, of course, would be awesome as defensive coordinator. So this is a really cool hire. That's a really cool opportunity that they have.
Yeah.
You say they're looking for 30-year-old coaches. Fine. I'll be the defense.
Tyler Brook is available.
Bring him in. He can do it.
You know, you are like only one or two steps removed from a quality control coach on a college sideline. And that is like a good 5 years away from being an NFL coordinator, Tyler Brook.
Hey, one day, maybe, you never know. I'll just show up as an NFL coach when reporting is eligible. Great.
And it's Packers defensive coordinator, Tyler Brook. Yes. Who will not be running a soft zone for this game. We can talk a little bit more about that, because we do have questions on specific ones, and I'm sure actually, I don't even know if I have a favorite, because I barely know who any of these people are other than Brandon Staley. But we can get that in a second. Before we do, though, do you guys have like a favorite like high point of the season? Like, when you knew it was, when did you know that we had something, that we'd actually turn this around? Because I went through it today, and it was bumpier than I remembered. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, like, they had the middle of the season, like, Charger, Kansas City thing. And then we had the DeVito thing happen. And
we made him a viral sensation for like 2 weeks.
We did. And like I feel like we were still pretty confident through the DeVito game, at least on the offensive side, but I don't remember why. That's not a good love game. I don't know. What did you guys think that we actually were like a good team and a likely bet to, you know, be something slash make the playoffs?
I can say that, I mean, the Kansas City game, before all of those things go wrong, when Taylor Swift came to Lambeau, for me personally, was unbelievable. They played so well. The line played so well that we've talked about this. That was the perfect matchup for Joe Barry's defense. And they did everything right, and it was awesome. So that obvious, I mean, certainly that game made me think, okay, this team actually can do something.
Yeah.
Yes, they lost those games, but at that point, you know, I had started doing my weekly practically daily update of where they stand, what they have to do to make the playoffs, and you start to realize that like the odds are really good actually, because the teams that they're competing with are largely bad. You know, the Packers are of all of them on an upswing. They kind of had some decent tiebreaker positioning if a couple things broke a certain way, and they did break a certain way, and even in the beginning before they played New York and Tampa Bay, I had put this thing together. It's like, oh, actually they can lose two of these games and still be in great shape. Now you were hoping that it wouldn't be the first two, but then it's Carolina, it's Chicago, and it's Minnesota. You got to go to Minnesota and win. But if you could pull that off, you're probably a playoff team. And there it was. They pulled it off in Minnesota on New Year's Eve and they became a playoff team. Like it was kind of right there for the taking. You could just see it develop the whole time.
If it wasn't the Chiefs game for me, I think it's the Vikings game, because you're just coming off Jordan Love stepping up when the defense, you know, almost blew that Panthers game.
Yeah.
And then he just went nuclear in that Minnesota game. And then I went into Chicago just having zero. I honestly was not nervous really about that game. There was maybe a little creep of doubt right before kickoff. And then I think I started to realize what they had. Didn't expect a playoff win and almost a second one.
Yeah. I think for me it was the Vikings game. I think it took that long because there were so many like weird things that kept happening. The Tampa Bay game was brutal, and mostly because of Joe Barry's squad on that one. And then the Panthers game, like it was a good offensive game, but man, it was just not an overwhelming performance at all. The Vikings game is the first time they really pulled it all together. Like there were so many bumps in the road before that. They look dynamite, and it put all the rest of the games before that in sort of just a different context of, all right, the offense actually has kind of been this. The defense has struggled occasionally. There have been a couple bumps. But kind of since, like, the Chargers game, they've been reliably putting up, like, mid-20s points, good offensive performances, and they seem to be continuing it. And that stupid Bears game at the end of the season, I wasn't worried about it either, but I'm going to look back on that game in 5 years and see 17-9. And I'm going to put it in my head right now, like, that is the most dominant 17-9 win of all time. There has never been a more dominant 17-9 win in the history of the NFL. Like, they should have won that game by 40. That game is stupid. But
Hey, just wait. It's next year is the Bears' year, just like it is every year.
Yeah, they're starting again. They're there. Justin Fields going to take them to the promised land.
This is the first year, I think, since 2010. Where the team truly played their best football in the playoffs. I mean, obviously you can argue these games that you're talking about, Chiefs, Vikings, Bears, they played very well. But, you know, holistically speaking, like, that's the lasting memory. No one's going to remember the losses to the freaking Raiders and Broncos and Giants and Buccaneers and Vikings, who turned out to be lousy. I mean, you start to look at these losses, the Falcons, like, these are bad teams that they lost to, but no one's going to remember that because they absolutely saved their best for last. They looked dominant in the play in the first playoff game against the number two seed. And then actually, I still think the ultimate takeaway is that they played well against San Francisco. They should have won.
Yep.
So it's frustrating, but this is the first time since then that you could say they really did save their best stuff for the end. You know, you look at the regular season, there aren't that many high points. Like you said, like it's up and down. It's certainly not what you saw with Dallas and San Francisco. So that's pretty cool. You could maybe argue 2015 when they beat Washington and should have had Arizona. That's the game that goes to overtime with the Janice Hail Marys. You could argue that was kind of fun too, but I don't know. That one left me feeling like it was kind of a sour taste. So this was really a good time.
Yep. I think my least favorite game was the Broncos game. They ended up being a lot better than they were the first few weeks of the season, but after they got lit up for 70 against the Dolphins and Russell was just sucking. Losing that game 19-17 kind of sucks. But, you know, all in all, not too bad. Figuring stuff out at that point.
I hated the Giants game with every fiber of my being.
That thing, like, I still don't know what happened in that game. What the hell happened?
Just didn't show
up.
It was a letdown game. I think after beating the Lions and Chiefs, you know, you just kind of start puffing your chest out. Love was sloppy. The defense generated, what, 0 sacks?
Yes. On Tommy DeVito. 0 sacks against a guy who gets sacked a zillion times a game.
Yep.
That is also a stat that will pop out
later
on.
Before and after that game. I don't understand that one either. That doesn't make sense on paper. Their pass rush doesn't suck. Like, even in the midst of their worst, you know, they still had a little bit of pass rush. In fact, early in the season, it looked like that was going to be their strength.
Yeah.
How did they not get to Tommy DeVito, guys? That's so weird.
Rashawn, just remember.
Rashawn ran out of gas.
Yeah, he did.
That happened.
Not just in that game, just the whole tail end of the season.
Whole tail end of the season, yep. I also went and looked at that game because I was like, okay, maybe Quay was out of position a bunch of times. He didn't play in that game. That was a McDuffie game. And I feel like McDuffie's usually pretty good at that specific task. Not much else, but I'm surprised to see that was a McDuffie game and that they were so bad at stopping quarterback running in it. Man, that game was brutal. Also, by the way, this the Giants game, I went and crunched numbers for the mini-pod, which I still have to finish recording. This game has their highest WP added play of the season in it. In a game they lost, it is the tackle of Saquon Barkley when he's breaking away.
Oh, jeez.
Who did that? Keyshawn?
Maybe.
It was Valentine. Oh. He has a 50-yard return on that. That was their biggest play of the season in terms of turning winning percentage, and they still lost this game. incredible. The only thing that was bigger was the Blake Group missed field goal, but I feel like you can't give credit for the Packers for missing a field goal. So.
Yep. My girlfriend had to watch me watch that Giants game, and she does not follow football. And she was like, what is happening?
So bad. Alas, we got over it. We won.
Yep.
And thank God Blake Group missed a field goal, because we wouldn't have made the playoffs if he made it. So.
Ugh.
We also knocked out Kirk. That was also good. We ruined the Vikings season. Not that I want
Vikings to. Vikings are that team might be taking a step back. It's a rough situation.
It's a rough situation. They're in rough straits salary cap wise. Kirk is also very old now. This will be his age 36 season, coming back off of an injury.
Is he a free agent?
I think he is, isn't he? I don't think he's. I feel like everybody's assuming he's going to come back, but I don't think he has to come back.
He is a free agent.
Free agent, yeah. I feel like all the old guys are free agents. Like, there's 4 36-year-old quarterbacks. I think they're all free agents. Tanny's one of them. Shoot, I can't remember who else is. Russell's one of them. He's a free agent.
I like too many of the quarterbacks in this class, so now I'm getting a little worried. Take Bo Nix. I'll be fine. I can root against Bo Nix.
That would be a good Viking quarterback to take. I'm pro that. Kind of guy they do take, too. Like, they always take third-round guys who are meh.
No, take him in the first. It's fine.
Christian Ponder territory. That's good. All right.
What is the Lions situation roster wise? What's their cap situation?
Not bad. I think they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay. And they kept Ben Johnson as of today, which is kind of
just terrible. Yes. Just terrible. I mean, good for Detroit, but terrible for us. Ben Johnson's good. They are good in terms of cap space. They did have kind of a bad draft last year, and they're actually thinner at a lot of positions of import than a lot of other teams. I think if I was Ben Johnson, the thing I'd be most concerned about is I'm going to have Goff again, and Goff is only good behind an elite offensive line, which they have, but that turf takes guys out every once in a while. And if you lose Sewell or you lose Decker, then Goff turns into a pumpkin pretty much immediately. And they also only have one good receiver. That's it. Like, it's just Amon-Ra. And
man, is he good, though.
He's good.
Holy
he's
crap.
Good, but, you know.
He's good, and Laporta's good. But look at how burned they got with Reynolds not being on a, you know. And Reynolds isn't bad, but he's the best of what's around is all, though. They don't have guys who can. Well, I guess it depends. Jameson Williams, but he's developing more like an MVS type.
I think MVS is a good comp there. That seems to be what he's looking like. A little Charky as well. Those guys are all kind of similar. All right.
Do you guys feel bad about the Lions collapse, by the way?
No, I don't. Like, I have friends. Oh, JR does definitely.
I've got too many Lions fans.
Yeah, you definitely do.
That one hurt.
Rough day
I
in the
really
house.
Well, yes. I mean, I think I've said this before. My family, my wife and her family, devoted Lions fans. Like, that one was tough. Now, my wife handles these sorts of losses better than I do. She also is a fatalist when it comes to the Lions. Smart. She likes to remind me that she believed the Packers were going to win the Hail Mary, the miracle in Motown, all the way through. She believed that, even though I told her it was absolute nonsense. And so, you know, she's been around some heartbreak, but I really wanted the Lions to break through. If for no other reason than to just break up the monotony of Chiefs 49ers in a Super Bowl, like, whatever. Like, we literally just did that a few years ago. We've already got one of those.
Yeah.
So I really thought it would be cool to get some new blood in there. I love Dan Campbell. I hate the discourse around his going for fourth down, especially because the stupid decision
was made. Can I talk about that for a second?
Sure, go
ahead. I want to rant about that for just a second, because I agree with you. And this is one where there were a lot of different analytics people, and there were a lot of different non-analytics people. But I'm annoyed by this one because the numbers on almost all of their decisions were pretty much 50-50. It really was a feel play, and just do whatever you want. At the end of the first half, when they kicked a field goal instead of going for it, all the analytics guys were like, well, kicking the field goal is right, because you don't get the positional advantage if you go for it and get stopped. They get it at the two, they kneel, the half is over. And after that, the go for it's they did were universally like, that's aggressive. It is kind of a 50-50 call. It just depends on how you feel about your team. And it turned into a big argument about the decision when it should be, this is the quintessential, like, this is an execution problem. And this is deciding how you're going to execute. And more than anything, I think they made the right decision because their kicker's not very good.
He is not.
And that matters. Like, we know better than everybody.
Yeah. I have no doubt in my mind he misses the 48-yard field goal. No doubt.
And he's got to make – I mean, it's a tie if he makes one, maybe. The 49ers still get the ball back. But, like, counting on to make two is – that's a lot. He's probably not going to make two.
Yeah.
I feel like that whole thing got misfocused and should have been a football analysis question of, hey, like, you've been grinding out yards on the ground. You've been moving the ball pretty effortlessly. It makes sense because your kicker is bad and your offense is playing really well. And he's getting pilloried for all the wrong reasons here. So I kind of feel bad for Dan Campbell for that.
As far as the fan base, like, I get Packer sentiments of it's a division rival, who cares, screw them. I'm just an empathetic person, and I know miserable fan bases when I see them. I feel very bad for that fan base.
I do feel bad I feel bad for the way they lost. I feel a little less bad about it because we lost a very similar game.
Yeah, that part, like, that also hurt.
It was a little like watching it again, but like the off the face mask 51-yard catch was just garbage.
Great, great Brock Purdy throw, guys. I just want to say, what an elite quarterback.
I believe his entire EPA per play difference between him and Goff is made up by that one play, which is, again, just asinine. Detroit kicked themselves in the foot a few times there in that quarter, and I do feel bad about that because a lot of it wasn't their fault. A lot of it was just like the fumble is their fault. That's bad play, but like the punt that was the best punt in NFL history. Like, it was a 75-yard punt that landed on the 1-yard line, and some jag just grabs it and steps on the end line. Like, what are you doing? Don't do that. Like, I would be
And I mean, the Lions have the best special teams player in the NFL, and they screwed that up. And the guy steps out of bounds going into the end zone to kill a few more seconds. And obviously the call on the one line, like, it just starts to add up the way this is the closest thing I've seen to the 2014 season Seattle game.
It's close.
Where there's just so many dumb things that went wrong. There's the off the face mask. Two guys dropped wide open first down catches that led to a killed drive. There's, you know, outside of an onside kick going wrong, they had it all. You know, they had the bad coaching decisions, if you want to call them that. Well, the by the goal line was a bad decision.
Yeah.
They should not have run the ball. They nullified the timeout that they had.
That's the only bad call you can say they made.
Yeah.
It was a disaster. I mean, even if they get in the end zone there, I mean, obviously that works out, but then it's like, why would you run the ball? That's insanity. You know, like, there's no scenario where that made sense. So, man, I'm just, I'm down on it because, it would have been cool. It would have been cool for my extended family who have never seen their team in a Super Bowl.
Nope. I do subscribe personally to the if it's not the Packers in the Super Bowl, I just want also like people who've already won it in the Super Bowl historically, because I don't want new people in the Super Bowl. If like Detroit or Minnesota wins the Super Bowl, they become annoying teams. Like,
oh, I see.
I don't like that. Like, it's not good. Like, the Bears can always fall back. Like, hey, we won one. Yeah, okay, you won one. Good for you. But but like, it's nice to be on the exclusive club, and I don't want any new members of it, especially from our division.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's kind of amazing that the Bears have only been to two.
It is.
That's kind of surprising to me.
And did I love that most recent one?
I actually think it's more amazing that the Bears have been to two and the Vikings have been to zero, because the Vikings are objectively better run than the Bears.
Vikings have been to four.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the Tarkington ones.
Oh, yeah.
My bad. They have been to four.
Before the four falls of Buffalo, zero. There were the four falls of Minnesota.
They've won zero. They have
Correct.
Been to play.
1-0.
Yeah. Bud Grant, bad coach. That's.
Oh, how dare you. Superior zone. Wisconsinite, Bud Grant, legend. Minnesota legend.
Yeah. All right. You guys want to talk about anything else from this past season, or should we move on to our Patreon questions and talk defensive coordinators?
Zach Tom gets not enough love.
Hey, you know what?
Good one.
Yes,
good one.
You're right about that. And I have a conspiracy theory, too, on that. I mentioned this on the
his name isn't cool.
I mentioned this on the baseball podcast, which football people don't listen to. So I'm going to reiterate it here. I check PFF grades every week. And I check the PFF Packer total grades every week. And yes, this is me yelling at PFF. Zach Tom has been a high 80s, low 90s graded PFF guy for the whole season. He has been their highest graded player for the whole season. And I went to do season ending analytics and scouting stats with PFF and Football Outsiders and RBSDM. And they had his total season grade at 76 for Zach Tom, lower than Jordan Love, who was like 76.4. Like, that is not correct. Has not played badly at the second half of the season, certainly not badly enough to lose his 90 grade that he definitely had at some point in the last 4 weeks. And I'm mad at them for that. I think that they changed it to make him worse than Love. That is what I think happened there. So could be wrong, but I'm annoyed at them for that. There's a lot of weird Packer PFF end of the season grades, by the way. A lot of them didn't make sense. I actually didn't finish the mini pod last week because I got mad at PFF while I was reading PFF stats off. Like, this is garbage. I got so yes, that
feels like the quality of PFF's getting worse.
I agree. It does seem to be getting worse. Very inconsistent. Things seem to shift all the time, and the guys who defend it most vigorously don't work there anymore, for the most part.
A lot of people I respected are gone from there. Mm-hmm. So,
anyway, So Zach Tom is awesome. You are correct, and should be universally regarded as one of the best tackles in football.
Yeah, I can't believe that the question was Elgton Jenkins. Where's the best spot for him? That they actually drafted somebody better than him. Did not see that coming. You know, like
free ACL. Elgton was pretty nasty, though.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, for sure he was. For sure he was. All right, let's do some questions, shall we?
Let's do it.
It's starting with Mark Podskarby, as always. Off-topic question, but the Rhys Hoskins signing sent me down a rabbit hole of unofficial jersey retirement.
Oh, I'm glad you're here, because I asked you for an answer to this question because I thought you wouldn't be here.
My question is, why is the number one jersey, meaning Curly Lambeau, and the number five, Paul Hornung, not officially retired by the Packers, but yet they don't issue a number anymore? Is there any sort of backstory for these two? It seems both would be easy calls to put their names on the facade. So for the setup, Rhys Hoskins has always worn number 17 with the Philadelphia Phillies. He was signed by the Brewers. He will not be wearing 17 with the Brewers. The Brewers have not issued a 17 since 1992, the year of our Lord, where Jim Gantner played his final of 17, oddly enough, seasons with the Milwaukee Brewers. Jim Gantner was not a great baseball player. His numbers are very bad.
They are.
Offensively. Yes. Defensively, he was fine. He was a fine defensive second baseman. He's remembered because he was only a Brewer for 17 years, and he played with Robin Yount and Paul Molitor, so they're kind of like this troika. What's the word? Troika?
Yeah.
he just kind of gets associated with those guys. And he's from Wisconsin, and he's super beloved, and he's still around the team, and he has a funny voice, and I love the guy.
And his nickname was Gumby, which people found endearing.
His nickname was Gumby. Very, very fitting, because he has a weird voice. He's just perfect. He's a perfect Wisconsinite. But his number will never be retired because he just wasn't that good. But they have not issued it. So this unofficial retirement thing is kind of this open secret, I guess, around Milwaukee Brewers. Anyway, Paul Hornung's name is not on the facade. Curly Lambeau's name is not on the facade, but no one has worn 1 or 5. And it's super weird.
It is.
Why that has – I mean, I pointed you to an article written by Cliff Crystal, the Packers historian. And if you want to get started on it, go ahead, because it is – it is way weirder
it
than
is
I
way
thought
weirder
it
than we
be.
Thought. So, and feel free to jump in and correct me if I get this wrong, because I did read it, and I'm going to post it in the show notes if anybody else wants to. And you should, because it's fascinating. But let's start with Paul Hornung, because my initial thought and Matt's initial thought were he's probably not retired because of his gambling suspension. And that is not the case at all. That is not what happened at all. The real problem seems to be that there was no official process for retiring a number until, like, what, 1986 or so? I mean, maybe later.
Yo, even a little bit
later,
later
I
than
think.
That.
Yeah.
Even into the early 90s.
Yeah, even into the early 90s. And so there is all of this historical documentation about coaches trying to retire numbers in the past. Like, Don Hutson's number is apparently the first that was retired, but it's like, it was like a two-minute ceremony at the end of a game that nobody paid attention to, and they had to
they
dig
like
it
gave
up.
Him some token and shoved him on his way.
Yeah, and so that so back to Hornung, it actually looks like Vince Lombardi tried to retire Paul Horning's number, and that there was just no way to actually do it. He said in like interviews that his number. I think when asked what numbers are retired, didn't he say like it's Don Hutson, one other guy, and Paul Hornung, but like. Nobody
yeah,
could
Tony
find
Canadeo.
Tony Canadeo. A whole nother thing. Tony Canadeo is a whole nother thing.
That is a whole nother thing. Number three.
Oh my God.
It sounds like Tony Canadeo. Whatever. We gotta finish with Paul Hornung.
We do.
Go elsewhere.
And so, like, basically, Vince Lombardi tried to retire Paul Horning's number, but there was no way to do it, and so it didn't happen. And it just like became a thing, like that it wasn't done, and so they didn't do it, and they kept not doing it, and it became too late, and he passed away, and now. It's just a weird thing. JR described it to me, his short version, clerical error, which is kind of true.
Kind of. Yeah, it wasn't so much in what Cliff wrote. It didn't sound like so much that there just wasn't a process of retiring numbers wasn't a concept, you know, like not fully formed like it is today. So there are two accounts of this speech Vince Lombardi gave about Paul Hornung where he said as long basically one account is as long as I'm here, no one else will wear number 5.
Yes.
And another account is no one else will wear number 5 ever in Packers history, which is a de facto way of saying we're never going to give out this number again. But ultimately, the way to, quote unquote, retire a number is simply not to issue it to anybody.
Right.
But then you had guys like Forrest
Gregg.
Oh, and
Forrest Gregg, out of spite, issued it to people.
Forrest Gregg, who may or may not have been irritated that somebody would think that Vince Lombardi had considered Hornung the better player in terms of the greatest player he ever coached. May have given number 5 to some random kicker, you know, like there just wasn't the process hadn't been established and it was not clear what the wishes were there.
Well, and Forrest Gregg gave it to a scab too.
Exactly. So
I mean, there may be no official Forrest Gregg was trying to pick a fight here, but he gave it to a scab.
Right. And then we got to a point where it was just like, well, they can't retire it now. You know, Paul Hornung is played years ago. Now he's dead. Like, it feels like they missed their moment. So, I mean, realistically, they could go back and just do it.
Yeah.
But it seems strange, I guess. Curly Lambeau is a little bit more of a mystery. I mean, he is in the Hall of Fame as a coach, not as a player.
Yeah.
Cliff Crystal feels he should have been in as both, like Halas. But, you know, I think that's a little more defensible. But Curly, you know... Honestly, I don't even know. I don't even know why Curly's number 1 isn't up there. It certainly hasn't been issued since then. So
I think,
it feels similar. It's like there was no official thing.
No process. And also, Curly had fewer friends. Nobody's sticking up for Curly in the immediate aftermath.
Well, other than they named the stadium for him and built a statue.
They did. But also kind of a jerk. So there's that.
And the reason Canadeo has endured from that era is that he... seemed to have gotten upset when he thought that they were going to reissue the number three, and yep. he became very agitated and sort of advocated. It sounds like Canadeo's initial retirement was a group of fans getting together and just sort of
inventing,
deciding we're going to have Tony Canadeo Day, and they sort of quote unquote retired his number three and, people
and gave him a truck. And yes,
dude,
just,
you've got to read this article.
It's amazing. And did just go with it. And Tony Canadeo then managed to get himself into the team's front office infrastructure and kind of just eventually got it official by doing that. He worked hard to get his number retired.
Yeah, the gray ghost of Gonzaga, another player who didn't have a lot of success team-wise, but was very good. I mean, these are all Pro Football Hall of Famers. Like, yeah. We're talking about, you know, Horning is cream of the crop. So is Canadeo. It's just very weird. It sounds like maybe there wasn't a streamlined process for years and years, especially through those like fallow years where there wasn't a lot of greatness. So I don't know if they just didn't give it enough thought or whatever, yep. but like they could have streamlined this in the 70s or 80s and it just never happened.
One thing the Bears were good at is retiring numbers. They have the most in the NFL.
Who was the Japanese guy the Cubs signed? Since this started as a baseball question, and I know very little about baseball.
Well, they've signed a few in the last, like, two decades.
I know Suzuki.
You mean just for this year?
Yeah, they signed Suzuki. I knew that guy.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're not thinking of, like, Kosuke Fukudomi, right?
Oh, what a legendary name.
Yeah. I don't actually know the name. I think it's Imanaga, but I don't
know. Oh, we have that
know.
Guy. So, okay, I'll take it. All right.
I think it is Imanaga. I think you're right.
Cool. All right. No further questions.
All right. Good.
Thank you.
All right. Donald Anderson, not to be confused with Donnie Anderson, whose number is not retired by the Green Bay Packers organization. He's not a Hall of Famer, but he was very good. Here's the question. It seems to me as if Matt LaFleur has consistently screwed up playoff games by inserting guys coming off the injured list at the expense of guys who have been playing. He did it twice in playoff games by playing the best available offensive line personnel in 2021 and 2022. And he did it this year with wide receivers. Am I imagining things? Did he actually make the right call in these cases? Or does Matt LaFleur have a setting the right roster for the playoffs problem, like he has a playing in the Mountain and Pacific time zones as a favorite problem?
I personally think that it's just bad timing. Now, I think the 49er game, the cold 49er game, the 13-12 49er game, that one I think he did screw up. Like Dennis Kelly playing guard in that game, and it was Yash and Billy Turner at tackle. I don't think that was correct. I think that was overthinking, and I think he had Kelly in there because they anticipated running in the cold, and that's just not a smart idea. But I think on the receivers thing, like I will complain forever that Watson and Dobbs got too much time in that game, but Watson and Dobbs are still pretty good, and it's not like the other guys didn't play at all. Like I would have frankly put Bo Melton back out there after he scored a touchdown to get at least one more target. But I feel like that is kind of how the team is run. When those guys are healthy, they are the quote unquote starters, and a lot of the time that works. So it's also a radical play to pull Christian Watson in favor of a whole bunch of Bo Melton. That is also a radical thing to do. So I don't think he's bad at it. I think he's been faced with tough decisions and kind of gone with the status quo once and went with wild Dennis Kelly nonsense once. And so there's not like a consistent process there. It's just he got a couple things wrong.
Before the Cowboys playoff game, I think it was Aaron Andrews was talking about Jair's availability and talked about how LaFleur stressed to him that if you are going to be available and ready to go, just know that you are keeping another valuable roster spot from seeing the field. So it is clearly something he is thinking about, and honestly a pretty good quote to get from EA.
Yeah, agreed. And like honestly, this is a Watson problem. That game and a couple games this season are Watson played bad. He has not come along as quickly as, you know, we maybe would have hoped after last year's second half of the season, 2 years ago, so whatever. And when he's healthy and when he's on, he can still put up monster games, which he did at least once or twice this season. So it's not like it was just a dumb thing for a guy who didn't offer anything. It's not at all. It was your most athletic receiver, allegedly fully healthy, no hamstring problems. And it's hard. You'd be hard pressed to keep him out after that.
You can't convince me that it was wrong to have him out there against Dallas, because I do think he was used correctly. He was used Well, I mean, he wasn't used as a decoy exactly, but that's what the de facto outcome was.
Yeah.
And the receivers were just incredible in that game. Like, whatever alchemy they had, it was good. Now, obviously, San Francisco feels a little different. Feels like maybe they could have mixed and matched, or at least if he's in there, like, try a home run throw, I guess, once or twice. I don't know. I don't know if that would have worked, really. But, I feel like if you've got Christian Watson healthy, he's gotta get the field, you know? Like, he is your most physically talented wide receiver. And even though I realize he'd been out, I feel like there is just as good a chance that he makes a pop play for you, you know, one catch for 60 yards, even if, even if there's also a possibility he does what he did, which is not really do much.
Well, thank goodness he's fixing his hamstrings in the offseason. So it should all be solved.
Yeah. The big year for him. Like, it's a jury's out if he's the guy here. We're going to find out in year three. I mean, you're either a fart smella. Oh, dang it, I screwed it up. You're either a smart fella or a fart smella. What is your level of surprise that the Packers actually went through with firing Joe Barry? On that note, are the Bears really so stupid that they possibly give him their DC job, as has been reported as a possibility, with the update being they did not actually do that. Furthermore, any thoughts on the thus far four reported interviewed candidates for the Packers DC? Rumblings would suggest the current favorite is 32-year-old Christian Parker. Do you like taking a shot on a young and unknown guy that would you prefer a more proven commodity? I figure a guy like Parker, due to his youth and relatively little experience, hasn't yet established his scheme and may be more flexible to different defensive looks as opposed to someone like, say, Brandon Staley, who, for better or worse, seems like he'd have another flavor of Fangio defense. He'd be another flavor of Fangio defense. Maybe I'm just feeling burned by Barry, but I kind of would prefer to get away from a Fangio defense. Maybe that's more a problem of the operator than scheme itself?
Tyler, do you want to go first?
Yeah, the Parker one's super interesting. You know, scheme for a defensive coordinator is usually really just based off of what you've learned coming up, right? I could not tell you what he learned at Virginia State or Norfolk State or even Notre Dame or Texas A&M. So I am interested in that. The Ravens name that was floated today that we were recording seems super interesting just because he had experience in the Bears front office and then coached at a bunch of different places and has found a lot of success in Baltimore as a DB's coach.
I'm Googling. Denard Wilson.
Denard Wilson. There we go. So that one super intrigued me. Parker is cool. The fact that a 32-year-old could get hired in the NFL gives me hope as a 30-year-old high school football coach that maybe one day something could happen.
Heck yeah.
But I think as long as it doesn't feel like a nepotism hire, LaFleur just hiring one of his buddies.
Yeah, kind of the same. I'm kind of with everybody on Staley just because he has now, you know, failed. And I don't think he's necessarily a bad coordinator, but I think that scheme – so much as it is kind of a little bit played out. And I'm not impressed with how Brandon Staley adjusted to sort of the reality of the Fangio defense kind of taking it on the chin a little bit this year and not really changing things up adequately. Like, I want my defensive coordinator to adjust to the offenses that are placed in front of him more than anything else. Like, I think on defensive coordinator, you're hiring the guy more than the scheme 100 times over, basically what Tyler said. And, you know, that's hard to judge from our perspective. We don't know anything about these guys, how they are in person, how they interviewed, how they run things with their team. But I just want a guy who is, like, flexible and reacts to what is presented to him in a rational way, which Joe Barry, honestly, that was his big downfall. Just you trick him enough and he falls back into his old ways and it's easy to pick on him.
We're going to run nickel at the goal line, baby. Yep. Let's go.
So much of that. God, I'm not going to miss that. It's ridiculous.
You know, Parker too has had several different coordinators that he's worked under. He knows Fangio and he has been with Vance Joseph and Sean Payton, you know, the Sean Payton version of what was going on there, both merging the before and the after. So I think that's pretty key, you know, having sort of those variations rather than being sold on any one particular style. I find him to be a really exciting guy, but I would certainly, you know, in terms of do you want experience or do you want a newbie, it wouldn't hurt to have an Ishiro Evero, who's been a defensive coordinator in two places, you know, and is still on the ascent a little bit. I'm pretty curious to know what happens in Carolina, because if that guy's available, I think that's got to be what they end up doing. That's a perfect fusion of experience and still somebody who's on the up and up and somebody who might have some new fresh ideas, I think.
I just got a little chuckle looking at Christian Parker's Wikipedia page. For some reason, it lists his height as 5'9.5 inches. And it's just really making me giggle that he is like, it's not 5'9, it's 5'9.5.
Yo, that's exactly my height. I've been telling people I'm 5'9 and a half for years and years. And then my last height in or whatever measurement was I'd shrunk a little. So,
oh no.
Devastating blow. Yes. Devastating blow. Hey, I've still got 5'9 and
69 inches tall. That's all you gotta say.
Yeah. Nice. I am, by the way, surprised we haven't heard a single peep out of Jim Leonard. Not even a stupid rumor that's not true. So I assume that's not happening.
Doesn't feel like it, does it?
Does not.
Doesn't feel like it. You know, and I don't know, going back to when there was a report that he had been offered the job, I don't know how many people reported that. I want to say there was one report that he had been offered the job, but it may not actually have been as clear cut. I don't know. I'm just trying to go back in time 3 years, but I don't know if it was that clear cut that is what happened. So I have no idea. I don't know why I don't know why people wouldn't be all over the guy. He's had nothing but success, but who knows? Throb Zombie says, thanks for the great year. Not sure what I will do with my extra 90 minutes a week now. Charitable to think that we're done in 90 minutes. Can you share the Spotify playlist, all the intro, outro music from the episodes? Paul has great taste.
I will update it this week. I am busy for a lot of this week, but it will be posted on Friday sometime. It is currently like 270 songs long, and I've only got to update the last like 5 or 6 games. So yeah, it'll be good. It'll be out there. I'll post it on Twitter and I'll put it on wherever people go.
Ted Korth says, okay, so they dumped Joe and even signed some kicker competition. Got to assume that a lot of the old, like Bakhtiari and Campbell, will depart. If they can bring back Aaron Jones, what is the next priority to take this team to the next level? That's a
good question. It is a good question. I feel like it's just defense up the middle. I feel like on offense, they're pretty much set. They don't, like, it'd be nice to get some more depth at offensive line, but you don't need it. Like, if it's there, you should take it, but you don't need it. But, like, safety, inside linebacker, is a problem, has been a problem for a while. Corner's a problem too, but I feel like I'm sick of their up the middle defense sucking. I'm just sick of it. It's always picked on by opposing offenses that know what they're doing, and that is where I would concentrate my efforts.
I want to say safety, but the detriment of Devondre Campbell as he wore out this year was just devastating to watch.
It was. He's so slow.
It was such a detriment to the defense because you could just tell he was getting picked on in certain games. Mm-hmm. So I would really love another inside linebacker. I don't know if there's any draft questions, but I've started watching a couple. Fallen.
That's not a position you take in the first couple rounds, though, is it? Or is it?
Late in the first?
Yeah, I think late in the first actually okay.
Okay.
All right. It's one of those things where, like, if you don't have a star, it's easy to get average play. But if you get a star, it makes a huge difference. Like, this is like an analytics thing is like, don't draft inside linebackers early, made fun of the Lions for it, yada, yada. But like, Fred Warner's freaking great, man. And we kept losing to the Buccaneers because they had great inside linebacker play for a long time. Like, if you get a good one, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Ravens, Patrick Queen, Roquan Smith. Mm-hmm. Those guys dominated all year long. And now, their season's over, but they were the number one defense.
They were.
It was good while it lasted.
They lost me a lot of money.
Yeah. All right. David says, since the Lions choked away a 17-point halftime lead, continuing their streak of losing road playoff games that dates back to the Eisenhower administration, Dan Campbell has been getting some heat for being aggressive on fourth down while in field goal range. I don't object to the fourth downs themselves so much as I object to the decision to set up an initial fourth down call by running it on third and medium as opposed to passing it just beyond the sticks, especially since a field goal would have made it a 3-possession game. Do the analytics agree with me here?
I think they do on the run call more than anything. On the fourth down calls, like I said, they're pretty even Stevens. That run definitely cost EPA. I will tell you that. 100%. You want to be throwing past the sticks 2 consecutive times there, and that was just a waste of a down in a very important situation. So, yeah, they do agree with you there.
Oh, go ahead, Tyler.
Oh, sorry. I don't know much about analytics, honestly, even though I wrote a book about it. One of my favorite fourth down decisions the Lions made all year was like a 4th and 3, 4th and 5. And they just, instead of throwing past the sticks, they just ran trap. And the defense was so floored. It was like a 15-yard game. So I do think tendency breakers are an important
part. I think that's fine, but I think as the setup to that fourth down, it's not a great idea. That's all.
We looked at this when I was trying, when I wasn't sure if the Packers would play the Lions in the playoffs, kind of trying to see if the assumption is true that they would run it more on third down, being a team with a reputation to gamble on fourth down, that they would treat third down as just get within range, and then fourth down, we're going for it no matter what. And I actually ran that by you, Paul. And turns out not really. Like, they weren't above average in like third running on third down. They were just whatever. They were a middle of the pack team. So that actually kind of surprised me, because you would think that would be part of their process with two great running backs, that you would just chew up the third down yardage knowing you're going for it on fourth. But that's not really something they did. So it was actually a little out of character for them to run on third down to set up the fourth. That's unusual for them.
It was. You also shouldn't do that. Making it, one thing we know analytics-wise is setting up third and manageable is this way leads to doom. You should be trying, generally speaking, to convert first downs at all opportunities. Now, if it's like third, or if it's like first and 20, it may not be the smartest play to go for a 22-yard pass. There are, of course, exceptions to every rule. But generally speaking, if it's third and 5 or third and 7, you should try and get the first down. And then if you don't and you want to go for it, you should try and get it again. Setting up fourth and 2 is setting up a dangerous situation, especially the way people call short yardage, running into piles and stuff on fourth down. I'd almost rather be fourth and 5 a lot of the time, honestly. Especially on the Packers. They seem to suck at that. 0-2 on tush push. Jonathan,
not great.
Nope.
Jonathan Deal, some people make better coordinators and coaches like Jim Schwartz, Steve Spagnuolo. Despite having never worked together, people are already criticizing the idea of Brandon Staley as unfounded nepotism. Why is there so much negativity around him just getting an interview?
It was probably that yoga video, right? Before the game.
Yeah, that. I think it's mostly because when you're head coach, you still are, generally speaking, coordinating the thing that you're in charge of. And, you know, he didn't have great season. I really think it comes down to that more than anything. And honestly, that might be overreacting. Like, defensive coordinators experience a lot of ups and downs that they're not in control of. Defenses fluctuate a lot based on luck and other things. So that might be even a little unfair, but fact of the matter is it doesn't look great, and also the yoga. So I think that's mostly it. It also does seem like the easy pick. Like, we've poisoned the well there too on this podcast, so there's that. The familiar thing is not always the best thing.
I do think he'd be interesting. I am not opposed to them giving him a good long look. I'm drawn to sort of, like I said, the energy of these other guys that are maybe a little more up and coming. But I don't know. Again, like, was he the smartest brain in the room? Like, we don't know that. You just defense is just such a weird, meshed up thing. It's hard to identify who the real stars in the room were. And maybe it wasn't him. It wasn't Joe Barry either, I'm afraid. Yeah. The Rams, sorry.
I'd rather have Staley than Joe Barry.
That's an accurate statement.
Brian Polakowski says, are there any stats to back up my hunch that the Lions will fall back to earth next season, especially losing their offensive coordinator?
Tell
the Packers take back the NFC North crown next year.
Not really. We were really counting on that Ben Johnson departure, but the Lions were not especially lucky in one-score games. They were, I think, 5-4 on the season, which is perfectly in line with what you'd expect. They overperformed their Pythagorean a hair, I think, by like 2 games, but like they were still a 10-win true talent team.
They're good.
They're good. They're just good. So there's not a lot to say that they'll be much worse. They have a couple things could cascade on them. Like I said, like Goff is very reliant on a good offensive line in front of him, but they have that. They will probably have it again next year. So they should be okay, at least for one more season, as long as Ben is still there. Unfortunately, they'll probably be right there with us. So
there is a scenario.
Jared Goff
had
a very good career.
Yeah, he has.
Yes, he's good. He's totally good. He's fine.
There is a scenario where Dan Campbell just turns into a pumpkin.
Yeah.
Because that, I could imagine, just like any coach, your messaging is going to get stale at some point. I'm not going to say that's going to happen this year. Clearly that team loves that guy, but at some point,
I think he is kind of a pumpkin. And if he lost Ben Johnson, that they might crater horribly, but they didn't. So he won't.
Ryan Ziegler says, I asked in the middle of our it's probably time to tank phase who a good free agent get would be for the one man away scenario. Seeing as we might be closer than I expected, who is it for you?
I think we have the same name, Paul.
Buddha?
Oh, I don't think we can afford him.
I don't either, but he would be my one that I would like if I could get him.
APCs all fall in love with Geno Stone.
Oh, Geno Stone. Yes, indeed.
It's just an Iowa safety that has done pretty solid. He had, oh, my gosh. 7 interceptions this last season. I don't know much about him, but that buzz in the APC Slack got even crazier with the news that they were interviewing that Ravens coach.
Yes, indeed. And a great name. You can't beat that.
They need, speaking of Iowa safety, they need to draft Cooper DeJean and then, or DeJean or however you say his name. And then they don't have to worry about getting Buda Baker or any safeties. You know, they need like a difference maker on defense with the draft capital they have.
Yeah.
Like a real difference maker, not Quay Walker, who is fine and might be better than fine eventually.
Yeah. He might also be awful and off the team soon.
So. Right. Devontae Wyatt, same thing. Like they need somebody who is good now because everybody else is good now.
Back to Buda Baker. That's probably one of my biggest draft hits. Everyone said that guy was too small to play safety. I'm like, watch the film. He is a psychopath. He is going to be very good.
Draft psycho safeties is always a good thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Proctor says, thank you for the delightful podcast, and I hope you never have to field another question about Joe Barry ever again.
Unless he's the Bears.
I have very much enjoyed the conditioning insight Matub brings to the player injury/training issues. I actually have not found that anywhere else. I love it. I hope you cover the strength and conditioning coach replacement with as much fervor as the rest of Packerdom is following the DC hire. Question, what do you think it would take for the Packers to move on from Rich Bisaccia? The special teams were pretty bad.
So first I'll say it. You don't have to worry about the first part because we won't be able to stop Matt from talking about it. So you will definitely get that.
Yeah, like we have any hope or possibility of shutting that down.
Yes. And Bisaccia is tricky because he has a long track record of being good and the Packers have a long track record of not being good on special teams. And I don't know what you do. Like, what do you do if you move on from Rich Bisaccia? Who's better? Who are you going to hire? I have absolutely no idea. I don't know how to pick a special teams coordinator. I don't know how to make this better. It just seems bizarre. And part of it seems like kind of his nepotism hire, because he is a Daniel Carlson former coach. And the Anders pick seems like maybe that. And that's a big problem with their special teams this year, was just that. Like, Whelan seems good. Coverage still seems kind of bad. But I don't know. I got nothing here. I think you would need an obvious path forward from Bisaccia, and I don't know who that guy is.
I'm not versed in the ways of special teams coordinators. So
same.
Yeah, I don't know. I just have a hunch that they're going to be fine next year on special teams. I have no basis, no analytics. It just feels like it might be variable enough that it could bounce back their way. But I don't know. You know, they moved on from guys. Dallin Leavitt, that was Bisaccia's guy.
Yeah, true.
And then he had a horrendous week, and they're like, forget it, we're done with you. So it's not like they're afraid to move on from people. They have tried different things. They've experimented. They managed to invent a pro all-pro kicker out of thin air, kick return, I should say, out of thin air. So I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's tough.
Patrick Detmer says, I'm so excited for this team's future that this is the year I'm deciding to dive headfirst into the NFL draft and learning up on all the potential draft picks. Do you have any recommendations for content to consume or information to reference when looking at prospects? Tyler.
Daniel Jeremiah and Dane Brugler are probably two of the better ones. If you need a podcast, a little random one, but I know we talked shit about PFF earlier. Connor Rogers and Trevor Sikkim are two awesome dudes. They do NFL Stock Exchange. Which is a phenomenal draft podcast. And FanBuzz might be doing some draft content here shortly.
Go to Tyler's site, read about the draft.
Please help me stay employed.
Yeah, and also always keep an eye on the consensus board. One of the greatest things of draft season is that Arif, wherever he is these days, keeps an up-to-date average of where everybody is on everybody's draft board. And so you can get an idea of what everybody outside of teams is thinking about them. Sometimes the consensus board is very wrong, but it's good to at least keep an eye on it so you can see risers and fallers.
Dane Brugler is a madman.
Man, he's so good. That thing is amazing. I like Just all the little facts. Just leading with every single blurb with, this guy was raised here by these weird relatives where he did this hobby. Like, for everybody, how do you even find that out? It's incredible. He's a monster.
How many guys do you think got drafted last year that Brugler didn't know about in advance? Do you think the number is single digits, like three,
it's four? Single digits. I think with all those guys, it's single digits.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's crazy. JD, what is a bigger need for 2024, a legit safety in the mold of Butler or Collins, or a legit inside linebacker to pair with Walker? I, for one, would love a Hall of Fame caliber safety if we could just arrange
that would
for
be lovely.
The next Butler or Collins to come along.
I think this is a good time to bring up my guy.
All right, do it.
So, I think you usually see stylistically with like these incredible ILB tandems that they're just like different styles, right? You can make Quay that kind of thumper and then draft Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M, who Justice told me to watch earlier today, and I took some time before the podcast to watch it. That boy's twitched up. That man is fast. He is so fast for a linebacker, and he plays with his hair on fire. They use him as a blitzer. They use him as a spy. By the way, as a spy against mobile quarterbacks, no one could do anything against him. He just is so instinctive when they start scrambling. So that, plus he has excellent coverage skills and man or zone. He is a little wiry, but I think he can get a little bigger. But just having that kind of guy paired with Quay, I think would be an awesome build tandem.
Yeah.
Is he a 25 guy or is he a second round guy? Like where?
Jeremiah had him at 20 on his rankings today.
Okay.
I imagine he's going to test very well. He might fall naturally just because he is an inside linebacker.
Right.
Sure. All right. I'm in.
I'm in too.
If you say it, Tyler, I'm in, man.
That boy, all the first like five steps, I just want that boy fast. That's all I had.
Yep. And they need both. They're both needs. Yeah. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had convinced myself that they were going to take an offensive lineman in the first round, even though, you know, they do have those guys, but it felt like there was a pretty good depth of that position. And it felt like safety was just not something that they would use first round capital on, even if they really need it. But, inside linebacker, I hadn't really fully considered, so I'm interested in this.
Plus, Walker got pretty damn good by the end of the year. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah.
Price Trozen says, what would be the most plausible best-case scenario for the salary cap next season?
I mean, it's a hard question to answer because you could go out and get an impact free agent, and then the salary cap will be worse, but it might be okay because they will have added an impact player. But the best case scenario is probably that they don't add too much other than filler and then it completely recovers and they get Aaron completely off the books and then they roll into 2025 with a wide open cap. That's probably it. Like they've we're probably cocky because the draft last year was incredible and they didn't need to sign anybody. And if they do that again, and they probably won't do that again because that's how luck works, but if they can do that again, then clear cap and we're just amazing. That's the best case scenario, I guess. That's it.
That's exciting to think about.
There's no scenario where Bakhtiari's back, right?
Maybe.
No scenario is too strong. Of course there's a scenario.
There is definitely the big problem with Bakhtiari, as I understand it, is around his injury status. And whether there is an outstanding grievance that could be filed upon moving on from him. Like, he's got to be right and pass a physical to actually do anything with him, I think. If memory serves, that's correct. I don't think they can. There's griping there with Bakhtiari and how he was treated. And so there's ambiguity around their ability to move on from him in conventional means. So I think there is a chance he's back.
That's a $20 million savings off their cap if they can part ways with him before March. So it could be a race against time if he's healthy by March. Oh, man, that's a really interesting one. There's going to be some twists and turns there. And it's interesting how the grievance process could actually hold up their cap number. You know, like that doesn't feel like something that should have input, but it will. Yep. PJ Wessel says, ding dong, Joe is gone. Would a new coordinator bring in a change from 3-4 to 4-3? And should they? Thanks for a great season. Can't wait for the offseason content as changes come at 12:25 Lombardi. 3-4, 4-3.
I don't think 4-3 and 3-4 matters, really. Everybody plays a little of everything with people with their hands in the dirt and people not with their hands in the dirt. And scheme's a lot about a lot more than that. It has much more to do with number of cover guys and size of linebackers and cover guys, and they're probably fine sticking with what they got. I feel like when you do that, you got to do a little bit of a size change on your linebackers. That's the biggest thing. So I don't think the switching bases is worth it. It's just that's like a chess opening, in my opinion. It's like it's not a scheme. It's not a big anything. It's just you've decided to play this way. Now go develop off of it.
I was just a lad at the time, but wasn't this a big talking point with Aaron Campman back
yes.
in the day?
Yes, it was.
Boom, there we go.
You are correct about that. Aaron Campman was, I believe, not happy about having to play whichever one he had to play.
Was it old with capers, or is that too – that doesn't matter.
Oh, man.
It's been
a minute. Time is not working for me on that. I can't remember how long ago Aaron Campman played. It feels like forever.
Gosh, he was fun, though. Yeah. I loved that guy.
Oh, 07, I think. I don't know. Is Bob Sanders involved? Is Bob Sanders involved in that whole situation? Let me see here.
Oh, now I got us in a wormhole. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Look what you did. Yeah, so 2009 is his last year in Green Bay. So that okay. is the transition
oh, wow.
to Dom Capers. Yes.
Yep. That makes sense.
Yep.
Sorry, Aaron Campman.
But I agree with Paul's statement. I think moving from 3-4 to 4-3 is more about completely changing the body types and players that you have from a personnel standpoint, which I do not think is worthwhile because I do still think there is talent up front. Yep.
Just wanted to see, just double checking that it was Sanders. Was I right about that? Yep, Bob Sanders. Yep. He was done in 08 and Capers arrived in 09. Okay, Mark Hackett, who spells defense with a C, as our all European friends do, which I appreciate. I guess defense will be prioritized in the upcoming draft. Will these young players in mind, what's your preference for new defensive coordinator? Number one, a proven guy like Martindale or Staley with their wealth of knowledge, or number two, an inexperienced guy like Orr or Wilson who could grow or improve along with these kids while also bringing in some new ideas. Green Bay looks set for years on offense, so this appointment is very, very important, which I agree with.
Yeah, I'm all for youth at the moment. We're a young team. We have a bunch of 25-year-olds. Bring me young, inexperienced, but dynamic with a lot of ideas.
Yeah, give me I just need someone that's going to get them going on Sundays. And I know that's just like a meathead answer, but like you want that new defensive coordinator. You want the rah-rah guy. So give me one of those. I'll take that.
Are you seeing where the scheme matters less? You know, we talked about the Fangio thing. And, you know, one of the criticisms of a lot of coaches as they get older is that they just can't adjust to the times. Is it becoming more fluid where scheme isn't even the thing you need to be married to be successful? Or do you still need that, like, skeleton framework in place to be really good at that job, at the defensive coordinator job?
I think it's more personnel and knowing how to utilize your personnel than it is running a specific scheme.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, last one, The Wizard of Loneliness on Blue Sky. What will be your lasting impression of this game and this season overall?
Fun.
Fun, too. I hope that's not about the 49ers game, but it probably is. But
we're not going to – that doesn't exist in my brain anymore.
I agree. My lasting impression of the season overall is going to be Jordan Love whipping a sidearm pass down the middle of the field like an inch past an outstretched defender's arm. He was good at that. That's my lasting memory of that.
I will remember Christian McCaffrey getting that last touchdown in the end zone, guys being unable to bring him down. I will remember that, but I mean, it's all about what comes next, right? Like, if the Packers go to a Super Bowl, then this is remembered as the 1995 season was in advance of the Packers going in 96. That, like, stepping stone, you know, they showed what they were made of. They were way ahead of schedule. That wasn't the case in 95, but, like, in this case, ahead of schedule. Or it's the, they, you know, rose up and had a missed opportunity, but then, you know, Jordan Love got hurt in 2024 and everything went downhill. Receivers didn't develop. You can go into a dark place real fast. But yeah. I do think it gets framed on what comes next because this wasn't supposed to be anything. This wasn't, you know, like it wasn't, there was almost no chance that this would be a missed opportunity. I think it almost became that with how well they did against San Francisco, but there's just very little that was going to sting in terms of expectations. And obviously it was a fun time because it was the first season divorced from expectations since, I don't know, 2008, 2009, I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably 08. I think so it was a nice palate cleanser, if nothing else.
I'll just remember how insane the rookie class was. Because yeah. I mean, we talk about the receivers and all that and the tight ends, but just like even Lucas Van Ness, yeah, Carrington Valentine out of nowhere was awesome.
He was. Van Ness at the end of the season was really impressive.
Yeah.
Like, they were all good except for Anders Carlson. That's it.
Oh, don't forget Lou Nichols, who
he doesn't count. Yeah.
Yeah, Lou Nichols is the only guy who doesn't make this roster. Grant DuBose is the only other guy who didn't see active roster. He was on the active roster, didn't see the field. So that's ridiculous when the draft class is like 14 dudes or whatever it was, 13 dudes. Yeah. Crazy, crazy hit rate on the success there. Yeah. So
insane.
And a UDFA that did pretty solid in Malik Heath.
Yeah.
It's right. And Bo Melton, who isn't a rookie, but it was like signed off the street.
Felt like it.
Yeah, felt like a rookie and also becomes a big contributor. So really, really great. Really special season in that regard.
Yeah. All right, we're done. Before we go.
I'm done.
Tyler, anything you want to plug?
Just read fanbuzz.com. I'm sorry if you're overseas because we have, for some reason, legal issues where you cannot read outside the United States.
Banned in Europe. Go check out Tyler's site.
Other than that, support Carmel High School if you're in the state. I don't know how you do that, but pretty excited about this upcoming year. I think I might have an exciting announcement by the time the season rolls around. So
nice. All right, pre-congratulations maybe. JR, you got anything you want to throw out there?
Pretty slow. I think I'm gonna go to Lambeau for Brian Gutekunst's press conference this week, whenever that is. I think it's Thursday. So we'll see if there's anything interesting there, and then I don't know, man. It's college basketball. We've got bracketology now. We've got baseball offseason we're gonna hit the spring training soon. So obviously the Bucks are in full swing. They have a new coach. So there's other Wisconsin sports things to keep me occupied until football rolls back around.
Yep. I can't believe the Bucks have a new coach. That was wild. What a week. For me, my final Shepherd Express column of the year is in, and go check that out. I sang on YouTube. Go check that out. And you can find that at APC and on my YouTube channel, which is Badger Noonan. And there will be a mini pod on Friday. I got way behind, and I had to get over my hatred of PFF's Packer grades. But there will, in fact, be a mini pod on Friday. So check that out as well. But that'll do it for us. Might take a little break here, mostly because I need sleep really badly. But, you know, we'll be back doing our normal off-season cadence if things happen for the draft. You know, we do once a month every so often. So that'll do it for us. And thanks to everybody for listening, for asking questions, for being patrons, for doing question priority, and for the mini pod, and for all the feedback on the mini pod. You guys really seem to like it. I also really appreciate that. But that'll do it for us. So do enjoy the Super Bowl if we don't talk to you before then. And we'll be back when something Packer related happens. Walking